Welcome to the Exhale Podcast, a candid conversation about current matters relating to respiratory diagnostic and lung health. Today's hosts are Mark Russell, Marketing Communications Manager, and Troy Pridgen, Executive Vice President of Sales and Operations for Vitalgraph in North America, a global leader in respiratory diagnostics. We interview Brendan Cooper, a clinical scientist and professor in respiratory and sleep physiology. He leads one of the largest lung function departments in Europe. In our discussion, we explore the Global Lung Function Initiative, also known as the GLI Network.
Well, Brendan, welcome to our podcast.
Hi, thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
Well, please give us a little background on yourself, education, experience, and what your current responsibilities are.
Okay, well, you've heard of the Beatles, and I happen to come from the same town as the Beatles, city as the Beatles, Liverpool. One of the greatest cities on the planet, and basically the city which populated most of America, I think. Not something we're going to repeat. But I educated there. I went to the University of Sheffield to do physiology and zoology as a bachelor's degree. And then from there, moved up to Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast of the UK, where I worked as a physiological measurement technician. Wow, there's a big word. At the Freeman Hospital, which is a big cardiothoracic center in the northeast. Before I did my master's there, I became a senior technician in those days. Then I got into research in a big way at the University of Newcastle and did actually my PhD is on protein metabolism in human pregnancy. Not a lot of lung function in that bit, but it did give me a very broad understanding of science and medicine and physiology and a whole host of other things. And so from there, I went on and worked as the head of the lung function service at Nottingham City Hospital and with Anne Tattersfield, and then moved actually just 20 years ago this month to Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham, part of University Hospitals in Birmingham, where I am currently the honorary professor of respiratory and sleep physiology and a consultant clinical scientist in respiratory and sleep physiology. I have many other strings to my bow, which will probably use up the whole of the podcast, so I think I'll just stop there.
Well, that's a great introduction and background. We certainly appreciate you joining us today. And of course, we are a respiratory diagnostic company ourselves. So today's podcast is all about GLI, and was hoping we could just start from the beginning and have you give us a sense of, you know, what is the Global Lung Function Initiative or GLI Network?
Okay, so I am currently a co-chair of the GLI, but I've come into this all a little bit late. The GLI is the Global Lung Function Initiative, or GLI Network, as we now call it. And it was an initiative to obtain better reference values for lung function testing. It was originally founded by Philip Coignet, Janet Stocks, and Graham Hall, and others. Philip Coignet particularly, because he was a very, very smart scientist and medic who had done a lot of his own research on reference values, but being a generous man that he was, decided to share this globally and was very patient with a lot of other people. And over the space of about two decades, this organization has helped to improve lung function refuse values and their interpretation. It's made up of leading respiratory physiologists and physicians with an interest in physiology from Europe, UK, North America, Australia, Asia Pacific, the whole globe, hence the global part. And it's got ambitions really to constantly improve the reference values, because our patients get sick, but before they get sick, they have changes in their lung function. And we want to test people to see whether they are normal or whether they are abnormal. And it's defining normality which has been the problem, because then we know how to spend our resources on people that need further testing and follow-up and care, and those people that are just aging a bit and actually you're okay. So there's a lot of work going on. We've covered most of the key lung function tests, spirometry, lung volumes, gas transfer, but work's ongoing with multiple breath washout, FeNO measurements, and cardiopulmonary exercise testing reference values as well. So it's a very vibrant and exciting project.
So why is it important to use GLI reference values for routine lung function testing?
Okay, I think I've probably already started to answer this, but it's needed to detect evidence of disease by finding out what's abnormal. but you need to define what's normal. So we use reference ranges, for example, in blood tests. It's very common. You go to the doctor, you get a blood taken, and then the values come back, and then it shows what's outside the normal range as to what's abnormal, and then that fits a clinical picture along with the history and imaging and everything else. But how we define normal has changed over the history of, you know, the last 100 years in terms of respiratory physiology. We now understand that part of normal comes from our nature, comes from our genetics, but another side of it is influenced by nurture, that what genetic pressures or evolutionary pressures happen to our genetics in the way that we will grow healthily or be malnourished and not grow as well as we would have done if we'd had a different environment. So people with the same genetics may have these different evolutionary pressures, and hence we get different development and growth. And so we get a range of normality. And what we're trying to do is to figure out, can we get a single equation that will describe normality? Previous reference ranges and values have many problems. They had small numbers, they had different types of populations were studied, they had very questionable quality of data, some of them, you know, poor spirometry calibration or unreliable measurements made, and then the populations were measured with different and mixed ethnicity. But what GLI has tried to do is to use the best quality data that was published and available in large numbers. So for example, spirometry, 97,000 individuals' values were used to define those reference values. Transfer factor, 12,000. Lung volumes, 12,000. Whereas in some of the other previously used reference values, there may have been barely 1,000 or a couple of thousand subjects involved. So we've improved the sharpness of that tool for defining normality.
So it sounds to me like the GLI is a predictive set, but it's more adaptive or complex, I suppose you would say. What is the future of the GLI initiative? Is that going to be to continue to kind of grow those parameters or that understanding of what is normal?
Yeah, it's actually just coming into a very exciting time for GLI, in that partly as a result of worldwide events in societies, Black Lives Matter was a particular catalyst around the world that made people think very differently about how we deal with ethnicity and race. And just before Christmas, just gone, 2022, GLI Global was published as the new race-neutral spirometry reference equations. And this was a huge step forward, because we'd always had the dilemma in that the process of GLI takes published normal data from studies around the world, but it was dependent upon the populations that were studied in those particular papers. GLI has no control over that. That's all that was published, and the data was donated to GLI to perform part of the large equation. Now, the problem with that is that you get biased samples, you get whole ethnic groups that are never measured and never represented. So we always had this difficulty that we could provide reference values for whites, but not necessarily good ones for people from Asia, South or North Asia, Africa, African Americans, different ethnicities. So this step forward is absolutely huge, because we're producing a single equation that it is unnecessary to know ethnicity. It's a very bold move, and it's a very different move, and it hasn't always going to be met with a lot of satisfaction by certain professionals, but it's something that we have to do. The GLI Global fits all races. It's got slightly wider Z scores, and residual standard deviations for whites, but a more inclusive and independent set of values in terms of racial mix. The other exciting project is we are looking at a South American project where the data collection is complete, and we can add the whole population of many South American countries. And the key message there seems to be an association with altitude in otherwise healthy individuals. So they have evolved altitude, and that has affected their lung growth. That's another environmental pressure on their genetics. And then finally, there's a big project we have to do, which is the implementation of the guide for GLI Global, and also adding GLI Global for more than spirometry for all the tests involved. So as you can imagine, that's going to be quite a project in the years ahead, but it has many impacts on our clinical services and is generating many questions as well. And it's something that GLI is working on quite a lot going forward.
Well, let's talk about GLI for all ages. Can you touch upon the age equation and what does that mean for diagnostic consistency?
Yeah, so for example, the spirometry reference values from GLI cover from the age of 3 to 90 years, and GLI Global covers all, as we've mentioned already, all races and ethnicities. So that really gives it a consistency. But prior to, for example, in pediatric respiratory physiology, there used to be a very difficult set of data used in the UK particularly, where there was this sort of referred to as the adolescent dogleg in the data, in that there was a set of reference values for children under a certain age or height, and then there was a second graph or gradient above that age. And so literally overnight, a child could have a birthday and suddenly switch from one graph to another and gain, you know, half a litre in FEV1, which clinically made absolutely no sense. Whereas now with the GLI Global and the fact that we're covering from 3 to 90 years of age, there's a much more smoothed out, clinically relevant set of equations that applies to all populations. So that's really helped with all age equations and diagnostic consistency.
That's good to know. What are the challenges involved in developing and improving your reference values for lung function tests?
Wow, well, quite a lot of challenges for us, actually. Obviously, once you produce your GLI equation, and we've found that since 2012 and onwards, or in fact before, is implementing it into all countries. And we're going to have this issue with GLI Global as well, because there's the practicalities that have to be taken into account. For example, manufacturers like yourselves, you provide the software to predict for the predicted equations, but they have to be put into the software, loaded up onto every device in the world that you have sold, and then has to be checked and double checked during procurement to make sure that there aren't any errors in it for each individual site. So that implementation becomes quite a complex procedure from the manufacturer down to the person buying a new spirometer in a clinic or wherever. Another challenge, I think, is collecting data on all populations. So even though the GLI Global is representing an ethnicity-free equation, we still need to collect data from lots of other ethnic groups and keep adding that data so that we get a better and better and better overall equation that does fit people from all backgrounds. We are also not struggling, but facing the challenges of tackling the genetics and the statistics informing these reference equations. Maybe in years to come, when I'm long off the scene, reference values may have genetic markers that really help selection of the data for a particular gene factor, you know, gene expression in certain people that will predict how big they're going to grow, how big the lungs are going to be. Obviously, that's complicated by it depends on the environment they grow up in. We're looking also to sequential reference equations. So all we do at the minute is it's for an individual. It's a snapshot. You are this age, this height, this sex, and this is your FEV1 reference range. We want to do reference equations about sequential changes in the lungs over time. And that would be very interesting, obviously, in following patients who have conditions where they're deteriorating. You can imagine the trajectory of the sick patients compared to their reference range will help to better define when they're descending rapidly or treatment is either improving or at least stabilizing the decline. And finally, to do all this extra work, particularly to get the information from the populations around the world, we need to be looking for funding from big organizations like the World Health Organization or something like the Bill Gates Foundation or similar, because these are big, almost altruistic projects. They're not sexy to the journals particularly. You know, it's, oh, you've got a whole load more data and you've published a few more equations. but it's something that is so fundamental to humankind that we understand where's normal and where abnormal is. In other words, in defining how big a health problem we have and how much resource we need to give to treating it, I think it becomes absolutely fundamental. And we've struggled to get that funding and struggled to engage with these organizations, but we never give up.
So how is the GLI network working with the European Respiratory Society and European Lung Foundation moving forward? And are you also involved with the ATS over here at the States?
Yep. Well, because Philip Coigné was from the Netherlands and was very, very involved with the ERS early on. Indeed, he won an ERS award quite early on, which I'm very proud to have also won along with him many years later. The ERS had always been very supportive of the work. And about 5 years ago, the GLI, we were needing to expand to, you know, we'd done spirometry and now we wanted to look at the other tests, lung volumes and gas transfer. So we went to the ERS and they have what they refer to as a CRC and gave us funding for over 5 years to be able to pay for this work to be done. So the collection of data, the analysis, the costs for meetings and teleconferences and things like that. And they continue to support us. Now, ATS early on were also part of that call out for help and kind of withdrew. We're not quite sure why, but they said they weren't able to fund this project particularly. I think the rules changed about funding things. It wasn't a malicious thing. It was just the way things went. And so they kind of dropped out of it. But at all times, we've been looking for help. And it's great to hear that in the last 3 to 6 months, ATS have shown an interest in getting back involved with GLI. That's absolutely fantastic. We're going to have meetings at the ATS with the GLI and ERS to see what we can do to work together. Because if ERS has been carrying the burden for the last 5 years, maybe ATS can help us carry the burden a bit further and maybe even connect us with these people we need to connect with for this global altruistic project as well. So it's all very hopeful for the future. The European Lung Foundation, which is the charity that runs within alongside the ERS, have also been very supportive with their Healthy Lungs for Life, which collects data around Europe. So it's been an ongoing project there. So yes, there's lots of links with the ERS, but so have they been with the ATS. And I think the success of GLI is in that we all work together across all the continents, all over the world.
Oh, I agree. So are you going to be attending the ATS in Washington, D.C. this year?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not. But some of the team, Sanya Stanadovic, will be coming down from Canada. So she will definitely be there. I find it quite hard to get up across the pond these days. But yeah, we will have a presence there. So it's going to continue. It's going to carry on.
Well, Brendan, thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you here today. That's great insights and a lot of very interesting answers. How can our listeners learn more about the GLI network?
The GLI website, for mainly cost purposes, has been incorporated into the ERS website. It's not a political move. It was just somewhere that we could keep that information. And if you go on that website, you can look out for new publications, obviously, in all the leading respiratory journals, you know, the American journals and the ERJ. These publications and articles are coming out on a regular basis and will be doing as each of the projects comes to fruition. So quite honestly, Google GLI or Google Global Lung Initiative, because sometimes you get some very weird responses, and read a lot more. There's a lot out there. We're continuing to have the link with the ERS in terms of the website, but would be more than happy to continue that with the ATS. But there are discussions to be had in Washington, D.C., I think.
Well, Brendan, thank you again for being on our podcast. This has been very informative, and hopefully we can extend our communication with the GLI network over here with ATS and get a more of a compensation of what is going on in today's lung function testing.
Yep, I think Europe and America are coming a lot closer for a lot of other reasons at the moment, and GLI wouldn't be another bad one.
Exactly. Well, thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
You reached the end of another episode of the Exhale Podcast. Don't forget to follow us for upcoming new episodes, and please take our survey to help provide good content for the future. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to you joining us again on the Exhale Podcast, brought to you by Vitalograph.